Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of Business Beyond Borders, where we have made it our mission to talk to global experts and professionals, entrepreneurs, CEOs, and founders from a variety of industries and fields as we tackle the many aspects of scaling an international business. The goal here is to collect valuable insights and share in-depth knowledge so that you too can apply the winning techniques and strategies to go global and take your business to the world.
Hi there, I'm Cynthia Dearen, and welcome to Business Beyond Borders, where I talk to global founders and experts to unlock the secrets of international business success. Today, my guest is Catherine Reed, an international sales and marketing consultant from Austria with more than 20 years' experience developing niche products in emerging markets. Catherine helps small and medium companies to break through international barriers to create success. And she is joining me, as I said today, from Upper Austria. Catherine, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Cynthia. I'm really excited to be here.
Now, you are on the other side of the country from Vienna, and I was doing some research, and it looks like it's a part of Austria which is conjures up, you know, the sound of music and, you know, very picturesque and beautiful, and it looks as though there are possibly not that many people there. What is the vibe on the ground where you are in Austria at the moment as restrictions come off and vaccinations ramp up?
Well, actually, at the moment, in this district, there isn't a single case. I don't want to, you know, I should probably cross everything as we're saying this. But at the moment, Austria is doing pretty well. Austria has really focused on what they've called a 3G concept, which means that they've opened up pretty much with certain restrictions on events. So if you want to go in somewhere, you have to prove that you're recovered, vaccinated, or that you have an up-to-date test. So there's a huge testing program. And basically, travel within Europe is quite open. Also, from Austria, people are allowed to travel in. So for example, certain countries on the green list would be like Australia, New Zealand, Israel, Singapore. I saw that South Korea, Thailand has been added this morning. And then there are a few countries who were not allowed to enter at all. Brazil, India, South Africa, the UK is a complete no-no at the moment. So those are the things which are kind of on the ground. And I see that quite a lot of people are starting to travel for pleasure. Greek islands, down to Italy, which of course is not that far away from here. Across to Germany, business trips, those kind of things are all starting to ramp up a little bit within Europe, but also within the business space, the Austrian Chamber of Commerce for Foreign Affairs has started up with a new program of subsidies where small and medium-sized exporters can get subsidies for entering into new markets, for overseas marketing projects, and for international digitalization projects, which is an excellent program of support.
So it's all kind of kicking off again in Austria.
Definitely. High time.
Now, I'm keen to know a little bit about your story because this is the first time we've chatted. How did you get interested in international business and what led you to where you are now, which is consulting for international business?
I guess it started off with a love of languages, to be honest. I actually first visited Austria when I was 6 years old, and I was completely fascinated that I could be sent up to the bar by my parents and I could order something with these very strange words and I would actually get what I wanted. And then in school, discovered I had this talent for languages. So I went on to study at university modern languages, French and German. That included some time working abroad in both France and Austria. And I actually enjoyed the experience of being in Upper Austria so much that I wanted to find, let's say, a logical reason for spending a little bit more time here, and realized that the local university offered a diploma in export and international business, because this province, whilst we're quite a long way from Vienna, we are the powerhouse for export, and Austria exports around, I think, close to 60% of GDP. So export is a big thing in Austria. So I did this qualification, went back to the UK to work for a few years, where I also worked in export, and I also did the UK's Institute of Export Professional Qualifications, which you might have come across a couple of times with guests. And then I had the opportunity to return to Austria. So I kind of dropped everything in the UK and figured, okay, I'll take the chance now. I was, I guess, around 29 at the time. Figured if I don't do it now, I never will do. Came back to Austria, worked in a variety of companies. And then a couple of years ago, I decided that I wanted to take the leap into entrepreneurship. And so middle of 2019, I left my comfortable corporate job to start out as a consultant. And I work together with two colleagues in partnership. We all have different specializations, and that's where I am now.
Wow. So Austria is home these days.
Austria is definitely home these days, yeah.
And where is home originally?
Home originally is North Lincolnshire, close to Grimsby in the UK.
Wow. So you must have had an interesting kind of experience over the last couple of years as you watched your birth country, as it were, separate from Europe and the country that you call home now. How do you feel about that? And how do you feel that business in Europe is faring, you know, post-Brexit and partway through a pandemic?
Well, I think yesterday was the 5 years anniversary of the referendum. I saw a few things and my Facebook feed suddenly filled up with all of these horror images again. And I would say on a personal level, it's quite difficult. The first time I was here in Austria as a student, it was actually before Austria joined the EU. So I do remember the times when I needed to have a visa, I needed to have a work permit and all of these kind of things. And it's gone back exactly to that situation again. So I had permanent residency. Now I was, you know, at the authorities this week to apply for a residency card. They will give me 10 years, not longer. And I assume that they will extend that, but there's no guarantee. I mean, I'm married to an Austrian. I own a house. I pay taxes.
So you're hoping they don't send you back.
I assume they're not going to deport me.
Yeah.
But on paper, there's no guarantee. Mm. But on a business level, I would say that especially the food industry is suffering quite a lot. I mean, exports from Europe, it's not only exports from the UK to Europe that have dropped massively, but also exports from the EU to the UK. I think in total they've dropped by 23%, or Germany has dropped by even 34%. And apparently at the moment, the UK authorities are still kind of waving some of the exports through. They're not checking everything as strictly as they could be. And so exporters are expecting that they'll feel the full extent of this autumn time, year end. So I would say that those exporters who are dependent on the UK, they're quite struggling a little bit. But generally, at the moment, certainly in Austria, industry is picking up. They've increased all of the forecasts, and we're expected to be back to pre-pandemic levels by the end of the year, at least in the industrial field, because Austria is quite strong in steel and manufacturing industry. And originally the forecast was for end of 2022, but now they're forecasting end of this year, which is a great thing.
That is really great.
Just a quick message and we'll be right back to the show. We are excited to announce the release of Business Beyond Borders, Take Your Company Global. It's the culmination of decades of research, experience, and aha moments in the world of international business. Have you ever dreamed of taking your business global? Business Beyond Borders, the book, named after this very podcast and written by none other than our very own Cynthia Dearen, is designed to inspire and empower business owners to do just that. The book brings a fresh perspective to the challenges of creating a successful strategy for international expansion, getting up the nerve to execute it, and sustaining the momentum to see you through the process. Rich with case studies, anecdotes, and practical tips, Business Beyond Borders shows business owners and CEOs how to map out their international vision so that they can begin the adventure of going global. Whether you are just starting out or already operating internationally, This book is packed full of insights and tips for taking your international business to the next level. Set for release on August 12th, 2021. You can pre-order your copy today. You'll find the link in the show notes or head over to DearinAssociates.com. That's D-E-A-R-I-N Associates.com and look for the Business Beyond Borders book. Now back to the show.
What about Asia? Because you do lots of work with Asia. Are there any new trends that you're seeing in Asia and particularly outside China right now?
I think the rest of Asia is also picking up, and to a certain extent, they're running parallel to some of the trends which are in China. So what I'm seeing is that there's, in the same way that in a lot of the rest of the world also, that there's a very strong trend towards digitalization, including all of this kind of omni-channel retail, that it's going very seamlessly between online and offline experiences, which has always been there quite strongly in Asia, but this is coming through much more strongly and in a much more sophisticated way than it was done in the past. I think people are focusing a lot more on health. So all those kind of healthy foods, supplements, what else am I seeing a lot of? Sports equipment to a certain extent that, I mean, Southeast Asians especially have traditionally not been that, there hasn't been culturally that much focus on doing sport because the climate doesn't really invite you to spend a lot of time outside exerting yourself. But I think people are becoming much more aware of the fact that they at least need to walk, or they need to actually take care of their immune systems. And I think that this is done. And I think that something else that's quite interesting is that a lot of places, people are really rethinking their relationship with brands. And any brand who can't show that they really truly stand for the values that they say that they represent is going to have a hard time going forward, especially with this kind of Stop Asian Hate movement that's been gaining traction. At least, I don't know how it is in Australia, but at least in the US and to a certain extent, UK, Europe a little bit less. But I think a lot of Asians, especially in those more developed and sophisticated markets, are looking at that and seeing which brands are actually stepping up to the mark and putting their money and their values where their mouth is.
Yeah, yeah. I wanted to chat to you about market selection as well, because like me, you work with companies that are going global, and that includes helping them to decide which markets they're going to go into. I find that when it comes to market selection, companies often tend to gloss over the research piece, or sometimes they just skip it altogether and they make a decision based on gut feel or on opportunism when a random order comes in the door. Or at the other end of the spectrum, they just get stuck in analysis paralysis and they never actually make a choice and it doesn't happen. How does that line up with your experience?
Oh, I think this is one of those don't get me started on it moments, because
it's okay, we have time.
Yeah, I mean, one of my favorite rants is that so many companies, they start in a market because, I don't know, the boss or the commercial director would like to have a holiday in Italy, or would like to play golf in the south of France, or they start in Australia because it's good for the air miles, you know, you can get airline status for two trips or something like this. And that's just, for me, such a no-go, that I've so often seen it, that people are really pushing for a market. And when you say to them, what is the data to support this decision? They didn't actually analyze it, or they've tried to bend the data to fix the statistics so that it supports the decision that they already made on the basis of whatever reason, you know. And the other one, like you said, is of course that some people just, they get some random inquiry from Burundi, Peru, Turkmenistan. I mean, nothing against those markets, if that's where you have a strategic market to enter into, but they get some inquiry at a trade show from somebody they've never heard of, and they think, oh, that must be a market for us. And they potentially haven't looked to see if there really is something there for them. And so I think that people are often really not strategic enough about choosing which markets they go into.
I totally agree with that. I have a colleague who told me about a company that he was working for, and he is in the States, and his boss sent somebody out to Sydney because this guy decided he wanted to work in Sydney, Australia, and it was a US healthcare company. And the company blew through $2 million in about 2 years without ever making a single sale, just because somebody in the company said, oh, well, I think I'd like to live in Australia for a while. Let's set up our Asia Pacific headquarters down there, which is a strange kind of decision. And I know of somebody else who was on holiday in Bali and wanted to get a packet of Smith's crisps, which are an Australian brand of chips, you know, crisps, and couldn't get them, and rang up a colleague of mine who works at a big accounting firm and said, okay, I've decided that I will be the distributor for Smith's crisps in Indonesia. How do I do it? And that was the decision-making process. I don't think in either of those cases it worked out very well at all.
No, I can imagine. I had a similar experience a few years ago with a brand that the owner was adamant he wanted to enter into the Japanese market. I think it was a friend of his worked for a bank that had a new office in Japan, and they were pushing quite hard for the market. And when we actually analyzed the opportunity, we spoke with around five kinds of companies, ranging from distribution, import, retail, e-commerce, and said to them, in this particular niche, how does it look for imported companies? And they all said, look, there are a number of imported companies already in the niche. Japanese consumers like Japanese products, and so we wouldn't take your company on. And we couldn't find anybody who even would say, we think that we could make it as a success in 5 years. One of them said, if you're happy to just sell 100 pieces a month, of course, I can list it.
And what happened to that company in the end?
At that time, the project was shelved, although I heard recently that it's under investigation. They're doing market research again, and the pressure is again increasing to enter into the Japanese market, because Japan is a market with purchasing power, and therefore they feel there has to be a market there.
Yeah. So if you had to summarize the consequences of companies making choices about markets without using data, what would you say that they are?
I think people end up in completely the wrong markets because they're not strategic about why they want to export, and they're not strategic about who they want to sell to. So they end up in markets that don't have this real niche that they are truly genius in serving. And they end up with a lack of focus. And so they're trying to serve the wrong customers. They don't have any segmentation. And it often means that they maybe fail at the market entry stage, or they hang on in there because they don't want to admit that they've made a mistake, and they've already put this pin in the map, you know, and all of their corporate presentations have country X marked, be it the US or China, which are often those ones that people look at and say, oh, I have to be in the US or I have to be in China. And they end up with the wrong partners, the wrong distributors, and it just leads to so much frustration, wasted money, disappointment, because people don't want to accept that the sunk cost is well and truly sunk, and that they sometimes should just cut their losses and go for perhaps a smaller market that on the surface might not offer the same kind of total market size, but actually for their niche would offer them a much better opportunity in terms of less competition, more opportunities for them to expand faster, and somewhere that they would actually have the resource to serve correctly and properly. Mm-hmm.
Now, data is super important, but we know that building relationships is also really, really key when you're exploring a new market. What's your advice to entrepreneurs and business owners who are, well, if you're in Australia, for example, you're currently trapped on the Golden Island and can't go anywhere. What would you say to those people who are trying to build networks overseas, either ones who can't leave their country or ones who can travel again?
I mean, I think if you can travel again, you have it easier to a certain extent. You at least can go there and you can meet with people face to face. And under normal circumstances, I would advise everybody to at least sit over a coffee or a tea, or preferably a dinner, and spend some time with those people that they're looking at working with in detail. I mean, I think at the moment we have to leverage the resources that we do have at our disposal. I mean, be that the Chamber of Commerce, commercial service, whatever it is in your country that offers that. But also, I think people have bigger networks who are more global than they might think. So people should really look at who they know over LinkedIn and who they know who are potentially working in those markets who might be able to introduce them to people. So a lot of the business that I've been able to do in the last year has been through asking around in my networks who could potentially recommend me somebody who could be a good fit for product X or Y. And also sometimes cooperations with local business universities or even with other consultants to just see who has maybe a contact that could help. And it, if you have a referral, it's much easier, even online, to develop a relationship than it is purely by cold calling somebody. I mean, especially for markets like Asia or I guess South America also, which is not really my specialization, but those markets, I think you need to, on the one hand, be very visible yourself so that they know that you know what you're talking about, but also don't be afraid to ask people for help and to go out there, you know? I mean, I think sometimes people go in and they're frightened of making mistakes, but I think if you're open and you invest the time and the patience and that you're really genuinely interested in what people are telling you about their country so that you really want to learn about it, then you're going to be able to build those relationships.
Yes. I wanted to talk to you also about Austria because obviously you are British by birth, but Austrian by choice of country and family. And I would love to know what some of the key mistakes that you see overseas companies making when it comes to doing business in Austria and Central Europe. What do people get wrong?
I think people underestimate the cultural piece. They think because it's Europe, especially other European countries, they think because it's Europe that there's no difference, or they think that Germany, Austria, and Switzerland are like one market. That's also like saying that Sydney is the same as Perth, I think. You know, yeah. I mean, this is, okay, we might be much closer, but I think every country has these micro markets inside and people underestimate that. Mm. So I think on the one hand, they underestimate the differences, but they also underestimate the similarities because when you're talking about Central Europe, a lot of Central Europe has very similar historical background. They might perceive it in different ways because, for example, Austria was the colonial power effectively in a lot of Eastern Europe. But they do have this very similar historical background, which leads to certain similarities in taste in certain products. It also leads to a certain understanding between the markets. And because the market's all quite small, apart from Germany and Poland, maybe. Other than that, there are a lot of key accounts which are, for example, if you're in the retailing space for electronics, food, any kind of consumer goods, there are a lot of retail accounts which are spread across the whole of Central and Eastern Europe. So if you go to Hungary, for example, as a French company, you can work with your Auchan and your Carrefour because they're already there, or the UK can work with Tesco. So there are already these contacts that people may have that help them. But on the other hand, they shouldn't underestimate the differences that there are actually between the cultures, especially these days with political systems and, yeah.
So if you had to give a top tip for companies considering doing business internationally anywhere, what would it be?
I would say have a clear strategy about what you actually want to achieve in the long term, but be flexible about how you actually achieve that and what your roadmap should be. Because under circumstances, you probably have to be agile. And I always like to use the analogy that if you decide that you're going to drive on holiday to somewhere which is 7 hours away, you know that you are heading to, if you're heading from Austria, maybe you're heading to some nice destination on the coast in Croatia, but you don't know if there's maybe roadblocks on the way, if there's roadworks. So you accept that you might have to take a diversion somewhere. And I think it's the same with international expansion. You know where you want to go, or you should know where you want to go before you leave home, but you don't want to get hung up about how you actually get there. And I think this question of getting hung up on forecasting exact figures in the beginning is often something that leads to the analysis paralysis that you mentioned earlier. So I think people should really never stop learning about the markets that they're entering into and accept that it's like an onion. There's always more layers you can peel back, and that they should also, let's say, enjoy it. Of course, it should be profitable, but if you really don't like doing international business, then don't do it. I mean, there are other ways to earn your money, because if it doesn't make your heart sing, then probably you're not going to do it well.
I totally agree. Now, if people want to get in touch with you, if people are interested, especially in opening their business in Austria, how should they connect with you?
Well, they can connect with me via LinkedIn. I'm pretty active on there. You can always find me via LinkedIn. I have a website, which is katherinereed.com, which I think you put a link in the show notes.
Yes.
And I also have a free ebook guide about how to select which international markets could be suitable for your company, which might be useful for some listeners. And people are very welcome to download that at katherinereed.com/businessbeyondborders.
So super. And we will include that in the show notes. Katherine, it has been such a pleasure to talk to you today. It's a little bit like talking to myself, but Austria, Australia, other side of the world, weird kind of mirror image thing going on. But it has been a real pleasure, and I look forward to hearing how Austria continues to come out of the COVID pandemic and get back to business as usual.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a real pleasure.
Hi, everyone. This is Maher again. And just a few things before you head off. Firstly, if you feel you have gained valuable insights from the show, make sure to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss another episode. More importantly, don't forget to tell your fellow entrepreneur and business leader friends that this is the best podcast to tune into if they're looking to take on the world with their products and services. Also, if you are loving the podcast, please take the time to rate and review, as it's one of the best ways for us to get loads of free value into the hands of other entrepreneurs. And lastly, make sure to visit DearinAssociates.com. That's DEARIN associates.com, where we have plenty of free resources and tools for you to get clarity and build momentum with your international venture. If you go there, you'll find the blueprint to international success, ebooks, our latest blog posts, and more. So be sure to check it out. And until next time, this is me encouraging you to expand your vision and wishing you all the best as you continue your global journey.